Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you today?
And we are the guys that talk about precession and ancient knowledge. And specifically, we're exploring this subject from every possible angle. The angle of what was precession, how its mechanics work, why the ancients tied this to the rise and fall of history, what the higher ages might have been like, lower ages, and we have had over 25 guests on the show to date to talk about this subject from all perspectives. And I was just reading a little bit of Hamlet's Mill, and there's a great quote in there by author Giorgio de Santayana about precession in history. And he says, "It is by now only a boring complication. It has lost relevance for our affairs, whereas once it was the only majestic secular motion that our ancestors could keep in mind when they looked for a great cycle which could affect humanity as a whole. But then our ancestors were astronomers and astrologers. They believed that the sliding of the sun along the equinoctial point affected the frame of the cosmos and determined a succession of world ages under different zodiacal signs. They had found a large peg on which to hang their thoughts about cosmic time, which brought all things in fateful order. Today that order has lapsed. Like the idea of the cosmos itself, there is only history, which has been fallaciously defined as one damn thing after another." So that's a great quote by Giorgio de Santayana.
It really is. I love it because, I mean, it just kind of points out how really in the modern era, social Darwinism has taken hold as this idea that civilization just kind of evolves in a linear fashion and moves forward in a linear fashion, and there is no greater cycle or greater whole or meaning to life.
Right, and in that paradigm, anything that came before us must be more primitive. So when we're exploring ancient wisdom, ancient knowledge, it's almost hearsay in today's paradigm. But that's exactly what we're doing, and that's what we're going to be doing with our guest for today. And Jeff, why don't you introduce Gary A. David for us.
Well, Gary A. David has been intrigued by the Four Corners region of the United States since his initial trip there in 1987, and the following year he moved, or he sojourned through northern New Mexico, where he studied rock art and indigenous ruins, and then in late 1994 he actually moved to Arizona and really began researching the ancestral Pueblans and their descendants, the Hopi. This resulted in his book, The Orion Zone, Ancient Star Cities of the American Southwest, which really looks at the connection of Orion to some of the monuments and belief systems of ancient Americans, which I think is really interesting because there's correlations that we've studied in Egypt as well.
Right. It's a little bit of a takeoff on the work of both Graham Hancock, who wrote Heaven's Mirror and noticed connections between structures on Earth and constellations in the sky, as well as Robert Bovall's work. So anyway, Gary, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Walter. Good to be here. And hi, Jeff.
How are you, Gary?
Good.
So how the heck did you get interested in this stuff in the first place? What were you doing before?
Well, as you mentioned, I've lived here for about 13 years and moved here in 94 from South Dakota, where I had been living for another 15 years or so up there, and got involved with a Native American community, the Lakota Sioux, up there, and I taught English on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
Oh, you did?
And, you know, got involved with, you know, the star knowledge there. I met Charlotte Black Elk, who is the great-granddaughter of the famous Nicholas Black Elk of Black Elk Speaks. And she was talking about the star knowledge and had written about it and was distributing mimeographed pages on the star knowledge that the Lakota had. So I kind of got involved with the way the native peoples viewed the sky through the Lakota, And then it got too cold in South Dakota, so I decided to took my family down here to Arizona, and we've been living here for about 13 years. And
okay, well, hold that thought, because it's in Arizona where you've really made this amazing discovery.
Exactly.
You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence, and Gary, you'd mentioned that about 13 years ago you moved to Arizona, and what led you then to this discovery that Orion, the constellation of Orion, might be depicted in the Arizona landscape?
Yeah, I started going to some of the Kachina dances on the Hopi Reservation. Some of your listeners might be familiar with Kachinas or Kachina dolls that the Hopi carved to represent these messenger spirits. The Kachinas are hard to describe because they're so varied in their appearance. They're very colorful. They're usually some kind of mask is worn by the dancers. The masks can be any shape. They can look like a cylinder, or they can look like a sun, a circular disc, or they can look like raised clouds, or very unique kind of masks and designs for these dancers. And the Kachinas dance from in the springtime until right after the summer solstice. They have their final Kachina dance in July, and that's the Kachina season that they have every year. And I started going to some of these dances, and I was driving up to the Hopi Mesas east of Flagstaff. I was looking up towards the Hopi Mesas, and the Hopi settled on these mesas about 1100 A.D., and they started building villages and pueblo villages up there. On the mesas, and there are three primary mesas that the Hopi have settled on. They're called first, second, and third mesas right now. I was gazing up towards these mesas in the distance, and I had just read The Orion Mystery by Robert Bouval and Adrian Gilbert. And, of course, they posit that Orion is the template of Orion is found on the Giza Plateau, represented by the pyramids, the major pyramids on the plateau.
Yeah, the three belt stars at Giza are the three belt stars are the three largest pyramids there.
Exactly. Yeah, and I was just kind of looking up there, and these mesas are evenly spaced together. They're about 7 miles apart. And they go from east to west, and I was just playing with the idea. Well, maybe there's another Orion correlation right here in Arizona, and so I just put that in the back of my mind and went up to watch the dances, and then when I got home, I got out my sky charts and got out my maps and compared the two, and what I found really astounded me. Because there was, there seemed to be a Hopi village or a ruin site corresponding to every major star in the constellation Orion.
And this is if you key off those three sacred mounds as the three belt stars.
Those three belt they are the first villages that were built up there on the mesas and. That's where the Hopi still live today, and that's the center of their world, are these three belt stars. So it just amazed me that the correspondence would be so exact, and there were even Bouval's he has a few of the stars missing on the Orion correlation, and there's been some dispute on which stars are missing and which are actually there, or some might be buried in the sand in Egypt, some of the other ruins, other star correspondences.
Right. Well, tell us a little bit more about the Hopi. I understand that they're, descendants from a culture that was here long before them. And doesn't the word Kachina, I'd heard blue Kachina is a reference to a star, but I really don't know too much about the culture.
Yeah, well, the Hopi are sedentary people. They're non-nomadic. They grow corn basically and squash, and beans. The major triad of the nutritional triad of the people, and they built huge, in some cases very huge, villages, stone villages. In fact, the largest one is Chaco Canyon in New Mexico.
Now that's attributed to the Anasazi. So the
Basically the Hopi say they are the Anasazi. They don't make the distinction. Anasazi basically is a Navajo word which means ancient enemy. But the Hopi call their ancestors the Hizatsinom, or the old people, or the ancient people. So they basically they and some of the other Pueblos in the area are descended from the Anasazi. The Zuni people in New Mexico and the Laguna people, they're also Pueblo people. Right. And they all descended from these ancient ones that lived on the land and built these amazing ruins that you can still visit today.
Okay, so if there's some close relationship to the Anasazi, then some star or celestial alignment makes sense, because we know that Chaco Canyon, for example, the center wall is exactly aligned with the equinox, the east-west meridian, and I understand there's some other
it's amazing the work that's been done at Chaco Canyon. Anna Sofier, the woman who, the artist who discovered the sun dagger on the Fajada Butte, she's done an amazing job there. And there was a PBS documentary a few years back. Robert Redford narrated it. And it was amazing. It talks about all the different celestial alignments with the various buildings at Chaco Canyon. And like you say, the major ruin there, Pueblo Bonito, is very exact. There's an axis in Pueblo Bonito that is 0.2 of 1 degree from true north, that axis. So that they were very concerned about getting this north, especially north and south axis, and the corresponding east and west, of course. But
yeah, well, I've often talked about Chaco. You know, if you lived in a town where things were so neatly aligned with the cardinal points, you would have just a terrific sense of time and the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Just subconsciously, you would just glance at the shadows and know, what time of the year it is and what time of the day it is.
Really, the major Chaco is a kind of an unusual situation, because it has this strong north-south axis on it, and there are even roads going north and south from the city, from the major city there. And they run for miles and miles, and they're like 30 feet across, and there are berms on these roads.
I know, and they understand they don't know why they built them or where they go, but they're amazingly straight and long, aren't they?
And they run north and south. They're kind of like the Mayan Sacbe ceremonial roads. Really, though, the major points for the Anasazi people were the intercardinal points. That's northwest, southwest, southeast, and northeast. These were the solstice points on the horizon, where the solstice, summer solstice and winter solstice sun would rise at these intercardinal points, and that's basically the way that the calendar year was constructed. It's my understanding, though, that this north-south access represented the zenith and nadir of the culture. You had these four points on the horizon, the four solstice points, and then you had the north-south access. That would be the zenith and nadir. So you're having these these six points on a sphere represented cosmologically by this grand city in the desert.
Yeah. In any event, it appears that both the Hopi, the Anasazi, have roots in a culture that was connected to the heavens, as so many ancient cultures do, as pointed out by Giorgio de Santayana and Hertha von Deschen in Hamlet's Mill. And so you found this this connection specifically centered around the Grand Canyon area. Is that correct?
Well, the template encompasses the whole of the Southwest. We were just talking about Chaco Canyon. If you go to my website, you can see a map that represents the basic Four Corners region.
Well, you better give us your website.
And that's www.theorionzone.com.
Okay.
And there's a link for maps. You can go right to the maps. And you could see that Chaco Canyon is represented by the star Sirius on this template. The largest ruined site in the Southwest is represented by the largest star in the heavens. And I don't think this was just a coincidence. This was deliberately placed there. I mean, this is not a very hospitable place, the place that Chaco sits, this canyon. It's a rather shallow canyon, and there are no free-flowing rivers. There are some washes that go through there, but there's no major river area, and you would wonder why they would place this city out in the middle of the desert like this, with very little to offer, you know, as far as amenities such as water. You know, it's just kind of a mystery why they would place it here. But
right, although it could have been somewhat different some time ago.
Well, yeah, the area has gone through a drought in the last half of the 13th century. There was a major drought in the area, and I'm sure that it was a little better in some time periods. It's very far from a major river. The Rio Grande is quite a ways away. So,
what importance did Sirius play in their mythology or in their belief systems? Do we know that?
It's kind of like Sirius and Orion and the constellation Taurus were all very important in the Hopi way of life. The Hopi perform ceremonies in a kiva, which is an underground prayer chamber, and it was accessed through a ladder that you climb down into this subterranean space. At Chaco Canyon, the kivas were round. A lot of the Hopi kivas are rectangular. They changed, but that's another story. It gets kind of involved. But they would look up through the hatchway in the kiva, and they would see these stars appearing in the hatchway. And this, for instance, the belt of stars of Orion would signal the start of the winter solstice ceremony. When they saw this, the belt stars appear overhead in the hatchway of the kiva. That means that they would just start the ceremony.
That's a nice way to view stars, by the way, because you can see their movement relative to the edges of the opening. And it's always, I've done that a few times, and I've really enjoyed it. Anyway, hold that thought, Gary. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Welcome back to the Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host, Walter Cruttenden, and our guest today, Gary A. David. And we're talking to Gary about the importance of Orion, the Orion constellation, to Southwest Native Americans. So I'd like to jump right back in, Gary, and talk a little bit about what importance Orion is. I know you mentioned some other constellations as well. What was the importance of Orion in terms of the life of the Native Americans in the Southwest?
Orion, of course, is a brilliant constellation, and you can most people recognize it. It's one of the most recognizable. The Hopi, as I say, use this constellation to synchronize their ceremonies, the beginning of their ceremonies. And they relate Orion to a god named Masau. This is a nocturnal god, one of the few nocturnal gods that the Hopi have. Masao is a rather strange-looking character. There's a picture of Masao, an artist's rendition of Masao, in my book, and the Hopis have described him. He looks, quite frankly, basically, he looks like an extraterrestrial gray. Now, I don't know if we want to get into this aspect or not, but he has these large round eyes and a kind of a bulbous head. And the name Masao...
I've seen a lot of these petroglyphs, by the way.
Oh, yeah. There are Masao petroglyphs that I've found. There a lot of them have rectangular bodies. Orion can be seen as kind of a rectangular rather than kind of the hourglass figure that we see. It can be seen as a rectangle with the belt stars in the middle of this rectangle. So, Masao was the nocturnal god, the god of the earth and the underworld. It's very important that he is is analogous to Osiris in Egypt. He has that role to play of leading people to the underworld, which is the Hopi conceptualize this as at the bottom of Grand Canyon is the underworld. And there's a place in Grand Canyon, there's a specific spot called the Sipapuni, the passageway or conduit to the underworld. And that's where people go when they die. They go to this netherworld and they live an existence quite like they have lived on Earth. And there's kind of a free flow between the underworld and this world here. The spirits come back as clouds, and they help people, and they give the people living on this earth plane rain to exist. So there's the membrane between.
That's a nice analogy, by the way.
The membrane is very thin between this world and the next world.
Yeah, the analogy of a spirit as a cloud that has something beneficial like rain. I really like that.
Yeah. Now, with the constellation Orion, do we know whether the Native Americans used the exact same stars as were used in Egyptian culture and European and Middle Eastern cultures? Because I know that in a lot of cases, I mean, cultures throughout the world all had constellations, but they weren't always the same. They were sometimes different configurations of various stars.
At the periphery, right.
Well, the Hopi conceptualized the belt stars in particular as, they call them Hotamkam, which means beads on a string. And these three stars right in a row, they conceptualized them that way. And the template that's laid out on the Arizona desert kind of bears this out. You see ruin sites corresponding to every major star. And these are ruin sites you can go to today. Batatican Ruin, which is at Navajo National Monument, corresponds to Rigel, the left foot of Orion. The right foot of Orion is Canyon de Chelly. It's a national monument you can visit. The left shoulder of Orion is a place called Wupatki, not far from Flagstaff. The right shoulder of Orion corresponds to Homolobi Ruins. It's a state park. A large ruin site was there. So these ruins correspond to, there's a direct mirroring of the sky with the way these ruins are placed out on the Arizona desert.
Have you done any statistical analysis, as far as other cities there? Sometimes you can make various patterns
out
of these things.
Well, I discuss in the book the various angles of the constellation and the angles of this template on the desert, and they're pretty close. If you look at the map on my website, you can see kind of visually it's a stunning representation that the Earth mirrors the sky. And
and it was a common theme.
Since I've been working with this Orion correlation, not only Egypt and Arizona, but I've found there are other Orion correlations around the world. There's one in Teotihuacan in Mexico. And a colleague of mine, Jeff Nisbet, found one in Scotland. And they seem to be cropping up all over the world, and Orion seems to have play a key role in many, many cultures across the globe.
Right, and of course we still don't understand why that is, but just the fact that so many cultures went to such a great effort to effectively mirror these constellations, you know, just begs inquiry, and that's what we're doing.
I think in the case of the American Southwest, if you look at the whole picture, not just Orion, but Sirius corresponding to Chaco Canyon, the belt stars of Orion corresponding to the villages that the Hopi live, and also the left arm of Orion reaches over to the Grand Canyon and is kind of cradled in the Grand Canyon, which is a very sacred spot. Like I said, it's the Sipapuni, the place where the people emerged from a prior world. So the Hopi do have this conception of world ages, the four world ages.
Oh, they definitely do, yeah, just like in India and Greece and,
right, yeah,
and so forth.
The Hopi were very cognizant of living in, and they still are living at the end of the fourth world. Many elders say that we're at the conclusion of the fourth world.
Well, we're at the conclusion of this little segment right here. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. Just before the break there, you'd mentioned that the Hopi had this concept of world ages like so many other cultures. I think we've now documented about 30 ancient cultures that have this concept of world ages related to the stars. So I'm curious what the Hopi themselves have thought of your observation.
When I was writing the book, I just was taken by this correspondence and decided to just write it down and put the evidence out there and see what kind of response I would get. You know, I didn't consciously try to seek out any Hopi elders to verify it, because that's a very long and tedious process, because life on the reservation does not move in the same ways that life off the reservation move. It's a kind of a circular culture, and it takes a long time to gain access to it and to get information. But since I've written the book, I've been in contact with some Hopis, and they have been presenting this material to the elders in their villages. And I've been getting some encouraging responses, like that, you know, the Hopi are not very forthcoming with sacred knowledge, and they're not too willing to share it to the world, with the world at large.
That's so common with, you know, Westerners meeting indigenous people like Graul and Dederling,
right,
meeting the Dogon. That
sure, yeah.
Took, over 10 years just to get some inner knowledge.
Well, the Hopi have been burned, essentially. They've seen ethnographers go in and try to write about their culture, and some of the ethnographers were not too sensitive to the culture, and they kind of forced their ways into sacred ceremonies, forced their ways into kivas, and you know, the Hopi just got tired of these Pahana, or white people, coming in and trying to study them in a scientific way. So
I don't blame them. It somehow removes some of the sacredness of the information.
Well, the basic role of the Hopi is to do their ceremonies and to keep the world in balance. I think that's what they're concerned with. They're not concerned about the world at large knowing what they're doing, but they have a very complex ceremonial cycle, both the Kachina cycle and the non-Kachina cycle. And they just want to keep this this ceremonial cycle going as long as possible.
That's akin to some of the Eastern teachings, Buddhist and Vedic, that just by chanting and meditating, they feel that they're sending positive vibrations to the world and doing more good than sort of outward peace marches and things like that. And,
yeah, I agree. You know, the Hopi have see their role in the world as one trying to keep the axis of the world in balance and trying to keep keep the world going on an even keel. But, you know, it's getting increasingly difficult because more and more people are young people of the Hopis are not learning language, are not doing the ceremonies, and you know, some speculate that the ceremonies will soon cease, and you know, the world then will, the fourth world will end when the Hopi can no longer do their ceremonies.
Let's talk a little bit about their mythology in terms of world ages, because that's something I find particularly fascinating. I know in their mythology they talk about the first world, and in fact, I think when the fourth world was created, their creator god even said, "This world is not beautiful and perfect like the previous ones. You don't have." I think he even said, "Like your cities have been sunken and." There's no more flying padawans.
Here's a quote. It's in our book, Lost Our Myth and Time. "It is not all beautiful and easy like the previous ones. It has height and depth, heat and cold, beauty and bareness. It has everything for you to choose from. What you choose will determine if this time you can carry out the plan of creation on it or whether it in time must be destroyed too." It's a beautiful thought.
Indeed. The Hopi share this with a lot of other native cultures across the globe, that the earlier worlds were the golden age, essentially. The first world was the best world to live in, and because of human frailty and corruption of various sorts, social corruption or sexual corruption or whatever, these worlds basically collapsed, and they had another world was created.
And because of the movement of the stars, too, many cultures would tell us.
Exactly. You know, the Hopi believe that the first world was destroyed by fire, some sort of asteroid or volcanism. And the second world was destroyed by ice. So this might be a pole shift bringing on the Ice Age or something regarding that.
It goes with the Greek idea of conflagration. It's either fire or water in some form that ends these world cycles.
Well, the first fire and ice, that's how the first two worlds were destroyed. And then the third world, the previous world, was destroyed by a great flood. And there are legends of flood myths in the Hopi legend and Hopi lore as well.
And around the world, sure.
Yeah, I think the idea of flood myths, I think is particularly fascinating.
It's as common as the Great Year myth out there.
What is their mythology as far in terms of the end of the fourth world?
Well, they're not specific about how it will end. I've heard some elders say that fire will take out the fourth world. It's really... They're not really specific about how this world will end. They've just been specific about how the previous worlds have ended. So, but they most concede that we are at the end of the fourth world, simply because the whole society seems to be breaking down, and more and more people are leaving the reservation to seeking the material world outside and going to the larger cities to find work. It's very hard to...
Well, yeah, I think I can understand it from their point of view. You know, if they get a TV and a satellite there, and they see the outside world, and, it's a very different way of life.
Some of the villages on the Hopi reservation have electricity, and some do not. And, I've seen, solar panels on top of an old stone pueblo, and they're powering their TVs that way. So,
right. Well, it's a changing culture there and elsewhere. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence, and today we're talking with Gary A. David. Gary is the author of The Orion Zone, Ancient Star Cities of the American Southwest. And Jeff, you were mentioning something about stone tablets.
Yeah, Gary, we haven't talked about this yet in the interview, but you've mentioned before stone tablets are maps given to the ancient Hopi at the onset of their long migration period. I wanted to see if we could give our listeners an idea of what this migration period is and what these tablets or maps represent to the ancient Hopi.
Okay, at the beginning of the fourth world, we're talking about the end of the fourth world here, but at the beginning of the fourth world, the Hopi were given a set of stone tablets as kind of a deed to their land. And the god Masau, which I talked about before, gave the Hopi these stone tablets. And they've been publicized in, especially in a book called Book of the Hopi by Frank Waters. They've appeared in a couple other places, but they haven't really been shown to that many non-Hopis. I only know of a couple non-Hopis that have seen them at all, and they're hidden away on the Hopi land. And they essentially are the deed to this area. The Hopi went through a series of migrations early in the Third World, and this is where they set up the. They went to certain ruins, certain sites, and built villages, and then they kind of moved on. They abandoned these villages and moved to another place, and they made kind of a spiral migration across the American Southwest. But this set of tablets was basically a map and a deed to the land, showing that the Hopi were the owners of this area.
And so are these physical tablets that exist
now?
Yeah,
they're physical tablets, but like I said, they've just been talked about by a couple different authors. One anthropologist in the 30s saw, I think, one of them, and then Frank Waters saw another one, and he was described, had descriptions of these four stone tablets. And one curious thing about this, one of the tablets is the Fire Clan tablet. It's a smaller tablet, and the corner was broken off of this tablet. And a figure called Pahana took this corner and proceeded off to the east. Now, Pahana is kind of like a figure of Quetzalcoatl that the Aztec have, or Kukulkan of the Maya. This god that was with them at the beginning and then kind of left and said that he would return at the end of the age. But this figure of Pahana took this corner of the tablet and went off to the east, and at the end times he's supposed to come back with this corner of the tablet and match it up with the rest of the Fire Clan tablet to show that he's the true Pahana. The true God that will save the virtuous Hopis from destruction.
That's fascinating. How did the supernova explosion in 1054 AD or another volcanic eruption in 1064 AD influence their migrations?
Well, the 11th century seemed to be the time when they were kind of settling down from this long period of migrations. They were settling down and building these villages. Before that time, a lot of the Hopis lived in what's called pit houses. These are scattered houses, and they're not stone villages like we see today. But this area, this time period of the 11th century, when these celestial events, Halley's Comet in 1066 roared in, and the supernova in 1054, these were signs in the sky that really shouldn't be there. You know, the Hopi were used to seeing the stars in a regulated pattern across the night sky, and then suddenly a supernova bursts into their consciousness and I believe that they had some kind of spiritual knowledge, saying that they should settle in these certain areas, because the supernova was a catalyst, and also in the same time period there was a volcano going off quite close by, and it's a major volcano that could be seen for miles and miles. And this,
where was that, in northern Arizona?
Yeah, this is Sunset Crater. You can visit it today. It's right by a ruined site called Wupatki. It's northeast of Flagstaff. And this is a major event that drew people from all over the Southwest. It was, you could see it for, 100 miles or so. It just in the night sky especially. Just must have been a very traumatic time when the volcano was going off and these supernovas and the comet was going off. So I think this is when they established a pattern of living in villages, more aggregated in stone pueblos, and they established this Orion Zone template beginning in that time. Around 1050 it started, through the 1100s, and it took about until the 1300 when the pattern was finally established in the American Southwest.
Yeah. I always wonder if sometimes it's not based on prior knowledge, because the way the Vedic give the cycle, that you're still pretty close to the Dark Ages in the year 1000 or 1100, as seen in Western cultures especially. And we're finding that so many sites, Mesopotamian, like Angkor Wat, appear to be built on older sites.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's very, very hard to tell, of course, but I wonder if there wasn't some prior knowledge here, and maybe that's the reason they settled here, but I suppose we'll never know.
Well, Walter, I think that... in some respects, the people in, say, Chaco Canyon were living a better life than those than the people in Europe at the same time period. 900, 1000. They had a very sophisticated society, and it was probably better than the Dark Ages in Europe. So
that could have been in some ways. I mean, Europe got pretty bad. But anyway, Gary, believe it or not, we're at the end of our talk here, so I want to thank you for being on the show. I wanted to remind our listeners that your book is The Orion Zone, Ancient Star Cities of the American Southwest.
And you can visit Gary's website at www.theorionzone.com.
You can also get the book from adventuresunlimitedpress.com.
Great. Thanks very much, Gary. Hope to have you on again someday.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Well, that was a fascinating show. I really enjoyed talking to Gary about the connection between the Southwest
Native
Americans.
Yeah, off air, he briefly mentioned that if he didn't live in such a beautiful place in northern Arizona where he could see the stars, he probably wouldn't have written the book.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of books, he has a new book coming out in the spring called Eye of the Phoenix. So if you're interested in reading more about his research, go ahead and keep that in mind as well. Also, we have our CPAC conference coming up. It's about a year out still in next October, but it'll be back at UCSD. And visit cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com for more information.
And we have some terrific guests. Thank you for listening to Cosmic Influence. In the meantime, bring
on
the
higher ages.